Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Nitzavim. As Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur approach quickly, now is an excellent time to talk with your friends and neighbors about the podcast. Remember that you don't need an iPod to listen to the podcast. People can listen to it, and many do, on their computer, or on their phone, or through an iPad, or an iPod, or similar. Tell your friends what you think about the podcast, how to access it, and other thoughts about it. You can make a real difference to someone by telling them about the podcast, and enabling them to use it as part of their study in the coming year. People want to get closer to Judaism, and this podcast and others like it are an excellent way to do so. Thanks very much. I'll be sending out two podcasts this week. This one by Rabbi David Levenkreus about Nitzavim, and we'll also have one coming up shortly about Rosh Hashanah. There will be other podcasts these coming weeks, and so please check your iTunes or other podcast system to stay up to date with our podcast schedule. Rabbi David Levenkreus is a member of the Pardes faculty and also serves as the Director of Special Programs for Pardes. And now, Rabbi David Levenkreus.
Thank you, Larry. It's very fun for me to be doing the podcast 2 weeks in a row. This week we're going to speak about Parshat Nitzavim, and the pasuk, the verse that I want to focus on, is Dvarim 29:28, Hanistarot LaHashem Elokeinu VaNiglot Lanu Ulvaneinu Ad Olam. Lasot et kol divrei haTorah hazot. The whole podcast is going to be about this verse. There's no handout this week, but I do suggest, if possible, that you have the Tanakh open while you're listening, not only to follow what I'm going to be saying about the verse, but also to be looking at the context. I chose this pasuk because it's in the liturgy of the High Holy Days, and I think it's got lots and lots of messages that are relevant for this time of the year. Very inelegantly, I would like to translate it as follows. Hanistarot LaHashem Elokeinu, the hidden things are to God. VaNiglot Lanu Ulvaneinu Ad Olam, the revealed are unto us and our sons forever. Lasot et kol divrei haTorah hazot, to do all the things of this Torah. The context that this pasuk appears in is a warning of the bad things that will happen if we don't keep the Torah, and we then have this comment. It seems somewhat out of context, and in fact Gunter Plaut points this out, and his supposition is that this was added later, especially since it speaks of us rather than them, and he posits that this maybe was a congregational response to the Torah reading that became part of the text. This may very, very well be, but as we look at some of the more classic commentaries, I think we will find it very, very beautiful to see how they try and explain how this verse fits in context. What I'm going to do is I'm going to provide an array, a supermarket, if you will, of different ways that this verse is understood. Choose whichever one you like. And then at the end, what I'm going to do is I'm going to draw out a message which I think is relevant to the High Holy Days and also to life in general. So the first idea we're going to look at is that this refers to somebody who sins in secret. And in this context, what Israel is saying is that they can't be held responsible for a sinner that they don't know about or a person who sins in secret. In other words, if I don't know they sinned or they sinned in secret, don't hold me responsible for getting that person to repent. The hidden sins are for God. We are only responsible for what we know about. We have to apply the law to those people who we know about. But the proclamation of God's curse, which we just heard, applies to those who do it in private. And according to this understanding, this is not out of place at all. Because from verse 17 onwards, we have a list of sins that are punished by heaven. And if you go with this idea, What this verse does is summarizes and says that all sins done in secret are for God to punish, and the others we are responsible for. And this especially makes sense because of the person who says, I'll do what I like and I won't worry. It actually says in the verses before, don't think that you can say, I'll do what I like and I won't worry. You will be punished. And this makes perfect sense. So theory number one is that this refers to the sinner in secret. A second related theory says it's talking about sins that we don't know about, but this time it is sins that the person themselves don't know about. This is the Ramban, and he says this refers to sins hidden from the perpetrator by ignorance. How often do we do something wrong that we don't give people less change? We nasty to somebody and don't realize what an effect it's had on them. Probably our whole life is filled with these things. Occasionally a student comes up to me and says to me, thank you for doing this, thank you for doing that, and I've no memory at all of this ever happening. And it's very nice, and I'm very proud. But I often wonder, how many things did I do without thinking or not being aware of that actually hurt people, whether students or friends? If it's any of you listening, please accept my apologies now. So the second idea is that it's talking about a sin that the sinner themselves does not know about. The first one says that it's somebody who sins in secret. Both of these ideas share the quality that it's talking about the sins. But a third explanation goes in a different direction, and this one speaks about the limits of knowledge. It says that it's talking about lo b'shamayim hi, not in heaven. There are certain secrets of the universe that only God knows. However much science may help us, however much deep discussions and ideas may help us, there are limits to what mortal can know. What's fascinating in this context, though, is that the Torah was never a secret law. Unlike some other religions, such as the Druzim, the priest's knowledge was not exclusive. In other words, what this verse is talking about is the balance between having the humility to know that we do not know everything, and also the gratitude that we don't belong to a system in which the knowledge of God is hidden from us. What the Torah deals with is the overt, not the hidden. The Torah, the words of the Torah are revealed and belongs to or is the responsibility of all people. It's up to us to keep the mitzvot based on what we do know, and we need to be obedient to the words of God. According to this explanation, we may not always understand God's will, but we must do what we are called on to do and do what we can understand and accept. It reminds me very, very much of the conclusion of Ecclesiastes of Kohelet, when after going through all the ideas that life doesn't necessarily have value, he says what is important is to serve God and to keep the commandments. Whatever we may understand or may not understand, this idea is saying to us, keep the commandments. And this very much fits with the themes of the rest of the chapter, especially Dvarim 30, 11 to 14. So we had one set of answers that looked at it from the viewpoint of sin. Now we're looking at answers that look at it from the viewpoint of knowledge. We saw the first one that said, we don't know everything, but we know enough to keep the Torah. The second idea says, this is referring to God's secret Torah, the niglot, or the Torah that we have. This is the Torah that we read in shul, that we learn on podcasts, whereas the nistarot is God's Torah. And what's fascinating about it is this fits in very, very beautifully with Near Eastern culture, where ancient Britot were written in two copies, one that remained with each side, and it could be that we only have our copy, we don't have God's copy, and we don't know what is in God's copy. Knowledge, sin. Now let's look at time. The fifth theory that we're going to look at says this refers to past and future. The Nistarot is what will happen in the future, 21 to 27 in versiform. The Niglot are the events of the past, the beginning of the chapter, what is known to happen. And we have to base our faith on what we know happened, according to this theory, and that is the sign that the rest will happen. I often think about this in terms of Tchiyat HaMeitim, resurrection of the dead, which I must admit I have a lot of trouble with. If 200 years ago somebody had said to somebody somewhere, a Jew somewhere or anybody somewhere, in 200 years' time there'll be a thriving state of Israel, a regular country in which there will be zip codes. That's how much it'll be part of the rest of the world. You would have been looked upon as absolutely crazy. The person would have said to you, you're mad. There never will be something like that, and certainly not in 200 years. And I often wonder if the same thing applies to Tchiyat HaMeitim, to resurrection of the dead. If you speak to you and me maybe today, it's hard for us to understand, but who knows? Who knows what medicine will be like? Who knows what the world will be like 200 years' time? So this is saying, it's speaking about the past. It's speaking about the future. Believe in the future based upon what has happened in the past. Even for Moshe, as he spoke, this was Nistar. In this very speech that he's giving in this parasha, he's giving us a touch of what is hidden. And according to this theory, what we have here is a summary of the chapter. And so, unlike what Plaut said, it fits in very, very well. Time, knowledge, sin. The last two explanations, number 6 and 7, that I wish to share with you, I would define as drash, or sod maybe, sermonic, Hasidic. I'm not sure that these are actually what is written in the text, but I think they're wonderful. And in fact, I would call the sixth explanation forced, but delightful. The sixth explanation plays total havoc with the text. Instead of reading it, Hanistarot Lashem Elokeinu, the secret things are to God, Vaniglot Lanu Ulevaneinu Adolam, and the revealed are unto us and our sons forever, Lasot et kol divrei Torah Hazot, to do all the things of this Torah. Instead of that, what it does is it punctuates completely incorrectly, if I may say so, Hanistarot Lashem Elokeinu Vaniglot. The secret things belong to God, and so do the revealed. Lanu ulvanenu, for us and our children, adolam, forever, to do all the words of this Torah. Everything belongs to God. The secret things belong to God, and also the revealed things belong to God. It's all in God's hands, far more extreme than the ideas we've done before, but we nevertheless have to keep the Torah. It's some type of a expression of absolute faith. Faith that maybe I sometimes find problematic, but also that I think we need to be reminded about, that this is an element of faith. I don't believe we should have this all the time, but I believe we should have this sometimes, where everything is just God, and we've just got to be who we are. And I think our liturgy even recognizes it. There are times like Kedusha in the Amidah, when for a few moments we become angels. We're not supposed to be angels all the time. We're not supposed to be angels all the time. This is not the way that we've got to live our entire lives, but we just do it for a touch, for a moment, and then we go back to being who we are. I think we need this idea also sometimes. Everything belongs to God. And finally, a Hasidic explanation from Meir Yechiel of Ostrovitz. He says that the Nistarot are anonymous tzaddikim, people who bring pleasure, endless pleasure to God. But the Niglot, the revealed ones, these are the role models, the tzaddikim that we see, whom we need. He says it's wonderful to have secret saints. The Lamed Vavnikim, the 36 righteous people who keep the world going, that's a beautiful idea. But you and me, we need real people. We need real role models. We need to say, that person is great, and I want to be like that. And so he sees the Nistarot as being for God, but the Niglaot being for us. What a beautiful array. I can say this because I'm merely repeating. This is not any of it my ideas. I'm merely repeating what other people have said. It could refer to sin. It could refer to limits of knowledge. It could refer to the past and to the future. It could refer to mystical ideas. This verse can be understood in a myriad of ways. And in fact, it's not only this pasuk that is quoted in the liturgy, but we have other echoes. When we clap our hands during Al-Chet, and we say Al-Chet be-yodim or be-lo-yodim, we ask God to forgive us for the sins we know about and for the sins we don't know about. I think we have an echo of this chapter. When we ask God to speak about the Razei Olam, the secrets of the universe, I think we have an echo of this chapter. So what does it mean for you and me? What does all of this mean? First of all, if you want to put the podcast off here, please do. I highly advise people to think about these different ideas. Think about which one works for you. And maybe as we go into the High Holy Days, however it may be that you do or don't observe these days, you think about one of them that speaks to you, and perhaps one of them doesn't speak to you. But allow me to share how I understand it. I think there's a lot of talk over here. In these verses, there's a lot of talk about having sufficient knowledge to do what the Torah demands us to do. And I think this is often a very big question that people have in general, and also people have specifically over the High Holy Days. How much knowledge do I have? How much do I need to know? How much proof do I need to have in order to do X or Y? If God came down and said to me in black and white, this is what you need to do, I would do it. But this is not enough to me. And I'm always remember the story of the golden calf. Here you had an entire nation that had seen God, an entire nation that had experienced Har Sinai, and yet a few days later, they build the golden calf. How could it possibly be? And to me what this says, is that observance or obedience, or call it what you will, identity, is not dependent on absolute knowledge. We can have absolute knowledge and not serve God. And on the contrary, thousands of generations of Jews, with very little reason to do so, chose to follow God's word. So may I, the lingo of many of my students, give a shout out now and say to people, let's, over the Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur period, say to ourselves, how much knowledge do I need? How much do I need to have in order to do what I think is the right thing? And also to ask ourselves, to what extent is lack of knowledge real? And I really do trust it when a person says, I want to do X, I want to do Y, but I just can't believe in it. I think that's very real. But I also think there's a time that it may be a way to let ourselves off the hook, and I know I do this all the time, for not doing what I think is the right thing to do. A Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur challenge to me and to you, with best wishings for a Shana Tova.
Thank you, Rabbi Levenkurs. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.